You're listening to Eureka on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Entrepreneurs. Art collection is a massive and growing global market, valued at more than $60 billion annually. But it can be a stuffy world as well, where the auction houses have long done things their way. And while they adapt and innovate, there are also a number of upstart companies breathing new life into the world of art, improving the experience for both buyers and sellers, while making deals much more transparent. One of them is London consultancy Beaumont Nathan. The firm was founded in 2013 by two veterans of the art and gallery world, Hugo Nathan and Wentworth Beaumont. Both worked for Christie's before moving to the Dickinson Roundell Gallery in New York. And both are experts in the old masters, having helped to facilitate numerous high-profile acquisitions for some of the world's great museums. After a few years in business, Hugo and Wenty brought Tom Mayhew on board, now the firm's director of operations. With a career in growing small businesses at a management consultancy, Tom is trained to understand value, growth, and market dynamics, adding analytical and commercial thinking to the extensive industry knowledge of his partners. Here's Tom now on disrupting the world of art dealing through entrepreneurial thinking and the story of Beaumont Nathan.
So Beaumont Nathan is trying to become the first professionalized independent art advisory company in the world. And what that means is we're trying to give advice that is separate from the pictures that people who previously give you advice are selling. So we're totally unconflicted. We don't own any pictures. We're just selling advice, unlike a gallerist or an auction house, who are the people who typically provide advice in this marketplace. So we're trying to bring ideas from different industries into the art world and to disrupt it in whichever way we can. Before joining the art world, I was a management consultant. I trained in a sort of commercial environment, and I was hired specifically in the early days to help plan the growth of the company, help strategize and, you know, help us scale. But to do that, I was bringing in ideas from the professional service industry, and that's what we try to do with our reporting and the level of due diligence that we're doing on these ultimately very, very expensive art assets. We can be spending, on behalf of our clients, several million dollars. It can go up to $40-50 million. These are extraordinarily large acquisitions. There needs to be a level of professional advice like you would get for buying a house or buying a company, and that's where we fit in. Hugo and Wenty are, you know, they are industry veterans, and I think they knew there was something missing from the way the market was operating. It's quite a sort of old-fashioned, arguably quite lazy industry that's been resting on its laurels for some time. And there's not really a huge amount of commercial expertise anywhere, really. So I think they had a specific idea to complement what they knew about the art history and the sort of the street dynamics of the market with some more intellectual, more analytical thinking, which they couldn't find anywhere else in the industry, so they looked elsewhere. That's when they found me, and we kind of have been learning as we've gone, really. But now we use data, we use slightly more layered thinking than perhaps others do in the marketplace, and our clients like that. The early days for me was extremely overwhelming. You know, I'd been assessing regulated, structured markets in my previous job, and then I arrived day one in the opaque, unregulated market of the art market. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. You know, this is fundamentally a market that doesn't have any regulation, and you can trade on the information you find, which was leading to some quite short-termist practices and very bad outcomes for collectors who are buying and selling. So my initial reaction was one of shock and and horror, then sort of surprise when I realized it was the standard and it was legal, which was a surprise. But then I guess I saw the opportunity, and it was really to build a slightly more long-termist thinking culture based around some slightly more long-termist principles and set ourselves apart from the rest. I'm not saying that there's bad ethics at the heart of the market, but it's just simply that when human nature is exposed to conditions where they can do what they like and not be held to account for it, people tend to push the margins. And that's what happens in the market all the time. And because art is such a difficult asset to comprehend in terms of its quality and its value, people get away with imprecision. And that's kind of the line that we're trying to tread more carefully on behalf of our clients and deliver value on. One finds that traditional technological disruption has not impacted the art market as much as of this moment. And so it's still kind of stuck in the dark ages, at least at the very top end. Where there has been a lot of disruption has been at the lower end of the market, lower value transactions happening via online auction houses, via apps, via Instagram, you know, all the usual things. But beyond a certain point, it is still a very interpersonal industry. So we've really found that our disruption has been more one of principle and value and process than necessarily technology. I think the blockchain question is obviously a big one. I think the potentials for that technology are unknown as yet, but there is certainly a potential application of blockchain in the question of provenance with the art market. Who's owned what piece of art before you? Ideally tracing back to the moment of creation, that's a very powerful statement of authenticity. And if it can be applied in that environment, then I think someone will make the technological disruption perhaps that we haven't had to date in the market. So that's something to keep an eye on. And I think as a company who sees themselves as progressive in a relatively regressive market, I think we as an advisory firm need to be live to everything that's available to us and to be early adopters as and when it's the technology is ready and can add value. So our role is to keep an eye on these things and be quick to adapt when they can add to our armory. We see our business just very simply matching customer demand with supply, and the two founders are responsible for managing the clients on a day-to-day basis and for sourcing the material. That second bit is harder than it sounds. There is a limit to the volume of high quality artworks, masterpieces, etc. out there, and finding them in what is a very private, discreet world is quite difficult. So they spend almost all their time in that sphere. On my side, as I was saying before, there's an operational and strategic role, but we find that alongside our historical assessment for the artworks that we're considering for clients, that they want to hear about questions of value, they want to understand questions around investments, and they want to know that when they put this money in a picture, that if it's going to go down in value, that they know that beforehand, or if it's going to go up, they know that too. And so over time, I've applied my skills from the commercial arena into that kind of conversation. So spending increasing amounts of time owning that piece of the puzzle. You know, we are at an interesting stage of development where we've developed a position in London, which is one of the two great art markets in the world as of this moment. New York is the other one, and Hong Kong is catching up very quickly. The rise of Asia is a big feature that's impacting the market right now. But so for us, for an ambitious company that wants to be the best that we can be, we've got to move into those markets. So the next 12 months is expansion, and hopefully we will be in New York this time next year and really in the home of the market. The market is bigger, faster, better, as most things are in New York, and we need to be there. So that's our plan. You talk about the entrepreneurial journey, and I think a big part of that is looking back at what you were doing a month ago, 3 months ago, a year ago, and sort of cringing with embarrassment at how simple things were and how one's added to it. But I think it's unrecognizable in terms of the quality of the advice. Not having anyone to copy has been a big challenge for the business. We've had to learn it as we've gone and really learn what was applicable from the legal environment, the accounting environment, the banking environment, these sort of traditional professional service environments for what is high value but fundamentally different assets. So we've been learning a lot as we've gone. We've discarded things, we've added things, and you know, I think it's a much maturer product now and hopefully much more value add. But yeah, we were doing a lot of things at the beginning that we don't do now, and that's part of the business life cycle.
Thanks to Tom Mayhew for sharing the story of Beaumont Nathan. The show is mixed and edited by Alex Port Felix. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.